This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
And we are live here on Pet Life Radio's Ask the Vet with Dr. Jeff and on Instagram Live, here for you, here for your pets. And I've just gone live, and I mean, I'm alive. Here we go. Life with Corgis. Hey, how you doing? I'm waving. Good morning, or good afternoon, wherever you happen to be on this lovely Sunday here in LA, which we deserve it because I got to tell you, I don't know if you guys are in Los Angeles and you happen to see what was going on. I think it was Wednesday night. The rain, I'm telling you, the house shook. It was so, the thunder, the lightning, it was absolutely insane. And Tony, thumbs down, why is that? And anyway, it was like really, really insane. Interesting, I hear from so many people the next day about their dogs. My dogs, five of them, they literally, they could care less. But then again, my dogs don't care about fireworks. They never have an issue. Hey, JB, good morning. So it was crazy. I'm just curious to know, did some of you, I mean, I heard from my clients that a lot of dogs were nuts and they were hiding under furniture. They were so afraid. And I'm just curious to know what your experiences were with your pets, because it is really, I wish I had an answer as to why, what it is. I think it's interesting because dogs that seem to fear and don't do well with thunder and lightning and stuff, I know that cats don't care. I know cats don't care. My cats never really cared. But I've had some dogs that would freak out a little bit, but for some reason they don't. And I would get a call sometimes from somebody. Good morning, Steve. And I would get a call from somebody sometimes, and they say their dog's acting really weird. And I'm going, hiding, running around, just not. Something's bothering this dog. And what happens, my guess is, we're talking about a young, healthy dog, otherwise no change in diet, nothing like that. And what I've learned at least, is that dogs have an amazing ability to sense changes in barometric pressure. So what happens is before there's a big storm, the barometric pressure drops. And from experience, the dog made that for the very first time, felt that feeling, that sense, not knowing what it meant. And then what happens 2 days later, the thunder and lightning and the rain starts, and that freaks them out. Well, then in the future, they make that association, that feeling, whatever it was that they got from that change in pressure, is what they start shivering and shaking and acting weird and hiding even before the storm, because they know that historically that is what they felt before the first time it happened. And it's the same thing with how dogs can sense earthquakes and change. I mean, it really is insane. And so they know. We always say that, you know, we have our senses. Dogs have more than we do because they sense things that we have no idea. And I just think it's really, really interesting to see. So anyway, I'm just waiting for Steve, I don't know if Bethany's coming on, but she asked me a question and I actually called her back. And so you'll mention at the same time. We'll get to that. And it's a great question about multiple vaccines. And I'll explain what I learned actually from a human. It was really crazy, but infectious disease immunologist, and he had something very important to share with me. But so my sister asked a question about, is there any link between elevated feeders and bloat? And I was thinking about it, and you know, first of all, when do we use elevated feeders? A lot of times, if dogs don't see them, again, most dogs are, when they're eating, their heads are down because the food is on the floor. If you have a dog with megaesophagus, for example, the whole idea there is to feed them from an elevation. So the question is that any predisposition to bloat? And I looked into it. I don't see any causative relationship between elevated feeding and bloat. I'd be curious. I'm just trying to think physiologically, if anything, it would seem to be make it better. But, you know... Oh, there's a good one. What happens when your dog is deaf? But the thing is, they would sense the change of barometric pressure, even if they're deaf. But if they've never had this reaction or fear from the thunder and lightning, then they're not going to really care. So back to the bloat question. I had a case actually still going on. I mean, we're improving. I'm hoping it's going to be good. But a dog with something that my very good friend and colleague who comes and does, he's an internal medicine specialist, Sam Trebetti, and he has seen, now he's been practicing for over 20 years, and he's a specialist, and he's only seen two of these in 20 years. Now, it's textbook. I've read about it, but I've never seen it. And we always know when we talk about torsion, we're talking about a gastric torsion. That's where the stomach rotates on its own axis, gets blocked off, and it is a very, very major emergency problem. If not caught on time, it is surely a death. And it's very painful for the dog. The dog is vomiting continuously, nothing coming up because it really can't. There's nothing to come up, but that feeling, and they start getting mopey. They'll be hiding in bushes. It's really, really a problem. And anyway, that's called gastric torsion or GDV, gastric dilatation volvulus. The stomach explodes because there's no place for the air to escape. And it's really serious. That's definitely a medical emergency, medical and surgical emergency. So to have the spleen do that, the spleen is, you know, you got blood coming in, blood coming out. It's like a reservoir. It's additional cells. There's really no main function at this time. And dogs, we can live without a spleen. But this was a splenic torsion. So what happened is somehow the spleen rotated on its axis, cutting off the supply, blood supply going in, the blood supply coming out, and literally it basically dies. And it's very painful. This got infected, so it caused it to sepsis. Anyway, long story short, the spleen was removed, and the dog is still in the hospital, doing okay. There were a lot of secondary problems associated with the splenic torsion, and that's what they're battling now. Sepsis, hemolytic anemia. I mean, there are other things going on. But anyway, that's what we call that. That was a splenic torsion. So with gastric torsion, bloat, I don't see the link. If there was something that you've read or there is someone that is maybe making an association, because I see let's put it this way, all the cases of bloat that I've seen in my career, and there are many, none of them were feeding from an elevation. So even though it may increase chances, but it's not going to, it's certainly, by not feeding from elevation, it's not going to prevent it. Yeah, I think it's more of these large breed, deep chested dogs. And that's when we see it most commonly. And for some reason, it's not always activity, because we see it many times in dogs that were like even being boarded, where they were just sitting in a run for 3 or 4 days and they get bloat. So anyway, it's interesting. I wish I had the answers for everything. Unfortunately, I don't. So diving into color, it's a request to be on live. I will view the request and I'll accept it. But oftentimes, my experience, most people that have done this hit that button accidentally. So, but if you want to join, you're more than welcome to join. And I'm saying hello to everybody. So let's see, there are a couple of questions. I want to go backwards a little bit. One is about too many vaccines at once. So it's interesting because I've always been a proponent of, let's separate them out a little bit. I don't want to do 10 vaccines, whatever, never 10, 3 or 4, even 4 in the same day. So what is going on? And so I spoke to an immunologist, and he was saying the body itself, has the ability. Could you guys hear me all? Because I didn't have any audio. I know Mark can hear me. You guys on Instagram, no one's told me that they can't hear me. So I'm hoping that we're good. So anyway, the body can handle all of the antigens, millions of antigens at once. So then why is there fear about, you know, univalent vaccines and multivalent vaccines giving? What he says is when there's a problem, that the problem is not the amount of antigens the body is seeing, but it's everything else goes into the vaccine, the adjuvant, the preservative. When dogs react, it's not the vaccine antigen itself, the enemy. It's what goes into making the vaccine. So if you have a multivalent vaccine, for example, that has a bunch of different things in one, but it's only one adjuvant, it's only one preservative, that might be better than giving 2 or 3 individual vaccines. So it's very interesting. Now, another thing, I find most dogs don't react, I should say, to a vaccine. However, We've had the one vaccine that I have seen the most reactions to is a leptospirosis. And I'm not saying don't do it. I mean, for me, it's a lifestyle vaccine, and it's a bacterial infection, and it's usually coming from the urine and feces of these wild rodents. It's a severe effect on the kidneys, and we don't want them to get lepto. However, I don't want to give a vaccine if it's not necessary. So if a dog's lifestyle doesn't preclude them to having access or exposure to these things, you're not in the hiking in the woods or in the canyons where these wild animals are pooping and peeing in the streams, and the dog goes and drinks the water from the stream, then don't do it. It's like us in Southern California giving Lyme disease vaccine or giving a rattlesnake vaccine to somebody who never hikes. So no, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Don't sit there and give vaccines just because they're there, which is one of the biggest problems I have with some of these hospitals that happen, interestingly, to belong to big corporations, and they're vaccinating for everything. It's like, why are you giving a vaccine for that? They're not going to get that disease where we are. It's not even prevalent. So Bethany, you're back. Now you're joined late. We just talked about it. It says that you read there could be a correlation. Let's put it this way. I've never seen it. I've seen many cases of bloat. None have been elevated feeders. The whole idea of elevated feeding, by the way, is relatively new. And I recommend it most often for dogs that have megaesophagus, or they have severe regurgitation issues, motility issues. So you want to make this stuff easier for them. Or, interestingly, dogs that have bad spines, especially in the neck, and it literally hurts them to put that head down, and especially if it's a big dog, and go down to the ground to eat their food. So then we bring them up and we do elevated feeding. So I would love to, if you could send me that article, I would love to see it. We've never discussed about it. Now, how? Indoor Malmaseau, speaking of vaccines, great question. Indoor only cats getting vaccines. How do I feel? Well, I'm not anti-vaccine. Trust me, I'm not. However, I'm anti-unnecessary vaccine. And I look at it this way. Can Cushing's result in liver masses? Well, let's save that one. I'm going to finish this with the vaccines. Then we're going to go on to that. That's a good one. Oh my God, I'm being overwhelmed by vaccine. I love it. I have skunks, raccoons that come in the yard. That's it. Yes. If you have those kinds of animals in a yard, and you live in an area where they are prevalent, I would be safe and do the lepto. My point was, initially we talked about lepto, is of all the vaccines that I've given, the one that seems to give the most vaccine reaction is the lepto. So if I have an option of not to give lepto, I will not. But in a case like that, Sharon, I would consider absolutely do lepto, better to be safe. Now, let's go back to the indoor cats. I have indoor cats. I do not vaccinate against rabies or leukemia. And why? Now, first of all, many municipalities and cities and countries and states, whatever, I should say states, vaccines for even rabies is required for cats. I have my issues with that. I look at it this way. If a cat were to get rabies, it would have to be bitten by a rabid animal. My feeling is that most likely it's not the rabies that's going to kill the cat. It's the bite that's going to kill the cat. So, I mean, I've seen mangled cats, dead cats, because of coyotes and raccoons. It's not pretty. So the issue is, and leukemia comes prolonged direct contact with leukemia-positive cat. Not casual contact, not coming up to a cat and running away. No, prolonged direct. They got to be sleeping together. They're eating together. They're cuddling with each other. They live in the same home, sharing litter boxes. That's how leukemia is spread. So even if you have an indoor cat that just one night happens to escape, it's unlikely it's going to get leukemia. So what's my fear? Why do I care so much? I'll tell you why. Feline vaccine-induced sarcoma. This is a tumor, and it comes from vaccines in cats. And if you notice, if your veterinarian is sharp, no longer do we give vaccines to cats on the body where we would a dog, which is almost anywhere you can tent up skin, subcutaneous. Now, if I'm going to give those vaccines or any vaccine, I'm only giving it in a hind thigh. Why? If the cat should be one of those unlucky rare cats that should get this feline vaccine-induced sarcoma, you can save their lives by amputating a leg. But if that tumor is on the trunk, anywhere on the body, You can try to remove it. You'll never get it all. And ultimately, this cat's going to be put to sleep because of the tumor. And why was the tumor? Because of a vaccine. So why do I want to give a vaccine to a cat that doesn't really need that vaccine? And they're only cats. They're not going to get rabies. They're not going to get leukemia. So why risk it? I only give the FERCP. It's a respiratory. I still only give it in the thigh, even though that one seems to have the lowest incidence of associated feline vaccine-induced sarcoma, but I'm not taking any chances. So anyway, that's my answer for indoor cats. Hate me if you want, but I will not. I highly recommend against leukemia and rabies in indoor-only cats. Okay, next. There was a good question. Cushing's result in liver masses. Sharon, I talked to you about, yes, I would do lepto in your case when they have access to those rodents, those wild animals. Cushing's result in liver masses. Well, basically, it can result in elevated liver enzymes, which it does, but so does giving a dog steroid. What happens with Cushing's? The body is secreting its own steroid. So it's as if we are giving too much cortisone. And so we're going to see an elevated alkaline phosphatase. Also, by the way, if any of your pets, your dogs, are on phenobarbital for seizures, epilepsy, then yes, they too will have elevated liver enzymes. So when I see alkaline phosphatase enzyme elevated, my look at the history, or I'll ask the question, is your dog getting steroids? Is your dog on phenobarbital? If not, is he drinking a lot of water and peeing a lot? If the answer to those is he's not on those meds, and he is drinking and peeing, I'm not going to treat based on that, but I'm going to do the next test, which for me is called the low-dose dexamethasone suppression test. We used to use an adrenocorticotropic hormone test, ACTH response test, that I use as to monitor my Cushing's cases, but I no longer use it to make my diagnosis of Cushing's. I think most of the internists would agree. They feel the LDDS is a better test for diagnosing, and I use ACTH response for monitoring once they're on the medication, the triclosan veterol for the Cushing's disease. All right, let's, before we keep going, which I want to do, yes, we're going to talk about spreading out vaccines in a second, but we got to go and take a quick break for our sponsors here on Pet Life Radio. So don't go away. During the break, we can talk about the spreading out vaccines. Mark, take it away.
Real people, real stories.
Our little dog developed this lymph problem, but the chemotherapy lasted for 6 months, started developing more lymph nodes. So I thought I'd just try carnivore. The lymph nodes started to go down. Then I took him into the vet to have him checked out, and there was no signs at all inside.
My cat had issues that developed in his eye, and 3 months later, my veterinarian said, let's go ahead and remove the eye. I heard the carnivore on advertising. So I said, you know what? I'm going to order this product. They did the procedure. They did all the tests, and they said, I don't know what you did. This product saved his eye.
I've got a Labrador. He could hardly lift herself up off the floor. The treatment was chemotherapy. That's when I said, this could be the ticket. About 3 weeks, you could tell she was very alert. She was going on 5 mile walk.
She is just like prime again.
Call 866-836-8735. That's 866-836-8735. Or visit carnivore.com. That's CARNIVORA.com.
Use promo code PETLIFE at checkout for 15% off your order at carnivora.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
And we're back. We're just talking about vaccines, multiple vaccines, waiting between. So in California, we're talking about rabies shots. In California, it's required by 16 weeks of age, 4 months. Well, guess what? 16 weeks is when I'm giving the final distemper parvo and probably Bordetella, maybe influenza in that area. All right, maybe lepto. Why am I going to give rabies too? So I'm gonna take the lepto and the rabies. I'm going to hold them off and give them 3 or 4 weeks later. I usually give it at 20 weeks. Have I ever done a test to prove that too many vaccines in one day? No, but I will tell you from experience and from people complaining, seems like the ones that have had reactions to vaccines, period, are ones that got too many in one day. So I'm just playing it cool. There's no reason to load up. A week or two or three is not going to make a difference in immunity. So it's not like there's a little clock inside that body or in the vaccine that says, oops, it's been 4 weeks. no more. Good. I'm going to go from good to bad in a day. No, no, no. That doesn't happen. So I'm a little bit more conservative. I like to break them up. Shannon, here we go. Fostering a VP dog, 12-year-old Chihuahua, early pneumonia, concerning liver labs, ALTs, 901, ALT 401. Wow. All right. 12-year-old dog. That dog needs a little workup because if you have an ALT of 901, that is high. My normal is like 130 or something. So that is very high. So I would have that evaluated. Ultrasound, the liver, for sure. Alfasa 401 is with an ALT of 901, doesn't bother me that much. That's probably it's a vacuolar hepatopathy. We see that in old dogs. If the dog's not PUPD, drinking and peeing, I don't care about the ALT at 401. Especially if it's not on any medication, everything else is fine. But an ALT of 901, that to me, that's alanine transferase. That is probably the most significant liver enzyme we look at. I would 100% ultrasound, look at the liver, possibly liver biopsy. That has to be done now. You know, what we used to do is called a true cut biopsy with an ultrasound guide. And believe it or not, even though I, knock on wood, I've never had a problem with that, it is problematic. And now they're saying you should do laparoscopic liver biopsies, probably have to be done by a specialist who has the ability to do laparoscopy. It is safer. There's less chance of bleeding. Plus, you can really perfectly see your target. When we do it with an ultrasound probe, we think we hit the target. We may miss it. It may come back normal. And yet, in fact, it was really like a tumor. So laparoscopically is the way to go. Or, of course, we say open biopsy. But that's an open surgery. That's cutting the belly open, the abdomen, just to get a little piece of liver. I don't know. I don't know if I'd like that. Unless it's on the ultrasound, you see a huge liver lobe and everything is isolated to one liver lobe. Then I would go in and just remove the liver lobe. So, you know, that's something you want to consult with an internist for sure. So if sub-Q flu is home, I am concerned. And for one thing, I would do at least start Denimarin, okay? Esadenosil as a supplement. And what I learned recently, actually online from another veterinarian, Dr. Fine, and she was saying that for an internist, she was saying that that you should try ursodiol. We use that when there's gallbladder sludge, we use ursodiol. And she said that she has found success in treating dogs that just have high ALKFOS with ursodiol. But again, you want to do ultrasound first to make sure there's no terrible, no blockage in the gallbladder. All right. Let's see. Nicole, how are you? Shannon, I'd like to know what the answer to that too. All right. A mass, there was a fear of biopsy. If there's a mass and there's a fear of biopsy, then then you should, again, it really depends on the circumstances. If it's isolated and easy, I still think that what we do is we do a clotting screen first to make sure, because, you know, you're going blind. When you're going through the TrueCut biopsy punch, you're totally blind. You're using ultrasound, but you really can't see. So you want to make sure, first of all, the blood's clots. A chance of hitting an artery, absolutely, which is why, and again, fortunately, it's never happened to me, but that doesn't mean it can't always be a first time. So I would advise, yes, it's more expensive, but I would advise to, if you really need to know the answer and you want to do it safely, and otherwise the animal is okay, I would say, I would refer you to an internist for, it's called a laparoscopic liver biopsy. It's done with a scope. You can see where you're taking the sample from, exactly the right spot, and you can see the liver and look, is it really bleeding heavily or is it just a normal bleed and oozing, in which case it's going to clot. Could that be an indicator of Cushing's? Well, the 401, yes, it could be. But to me, I put it all together. You got to put together the whole history. And that is, if there's a high ALKFOS and PUPD, then, and normal ALT, then I would say, yeah, most likely early Cushing's, it's worth doing the Cushing's test, the low-dose DEX suppression test. However, with everything else being bad, and if the dog didn't present for PUPD, then, you know, drinking and peeing, I would say that. And a 12-year-old dog, I'd say it's just probably vacuolar hepatopathy. All right. Hello. I'm waving to everybody. All right. I want to make sure I didn't miss anything. So I'm going to be sending out to you guys questionnaire. It's done by a colleague of mine. And it was, we had an interesting discussion. An interesting discussion about the your take on veterinarians, your professional evaluations, all right, your own personal choices. And how it came about was, she is like I am, spending half the time on the floor. We are getting down and dirty. And yet when she was in vet school, they were trying to tell the veterinarians, we're professionals, we're doctors, and you should be wearing white coats and nice clothing and a tie. And I'm thinking, are you nuts? Are you nuts? My boss used to do, my first and only boss, we always wear a nice, you know, nice white coat and gabardine slacks and goofy loafers and his Rolex watch, right? And I never once saw him get down on the floor. I mean, no. When you know, clients, when they're talking about their veterinarian, I guarantee one of the things they're saying is, oh my God, he dresses so well. No. So I'd be curious to know. So I'm going to promote this questionnaire. I took it last week. It's great. It really is. And it's going to really help us more scientifically. She wants 10,000 answers. We're putting it out everywhere. And we wanted to find out, what do you want? What, when you talk about your veterinarian, what do you say? What characteristics do you find the most endearing, right? The one that when you're telling your friends about your vet, what are you saying about him or her? That's what we want to know. I think it's a great idea. And no one's done it before, not that I know of. So I'm told her I will try to promote it on my Instagram and on my Facebook as well. And I think we should do it. I think it's a really smart idea. Did I forget or miss anybody? Any questions here that I'm looking that I may have missed? I don't want to overlook. Now, the heartworm blood test, by the way, is fine, because that's taking blood. You can do, so if I had DA2PP and Bordetella and rabies, what I would do is do the DA2PP Bordetella. My Bordetella, by the way, is oral. And so it's not going to have the same effect. And then rabies, I'm going to push a week, two, three, probably 3 weeks. And but heartworm test, no problem. You can do that at the same time. And because that's taking blood. All right. I think I hit everybody. I did. Good. Any last questions? Now is your chance. So I'm waving. I want to make sure I don't miss. Good. All right. So yeah, let us know how you feel about stuff like this. Let me know with any questions. Again, as I say every week, you don't have to wait till Sunday to get a hold of me. Hopefully we have a gorgeous day here in LA. I'm going to the Rams game this evening. And so that's going to be fun. Oh, I also, it's funny, we got invited to this thing. They have a really high-end VIP, why I have no idea, me, a VIP tailgate put on by the Rams, posted by something. And I don't know, I guess out of a random drawing, how random could it be with that many fans? Maybe I should go buy a lottery ticket. But anyway, they chose our seat, so we're going to go to the early to this, you know, cool all-inclusive VIP. It'll be VIP tailgate party, so it'll be pretty cool, I guess. And probably with a million other people, but it is what it is. Anyway, so get a hold of me anytime during the week. You have me here on Instagram. You can get me on Facebook. Most of you probably have my phone number anyway. You can reach me on AirVet. When someone says, I'm out of my corporate practice that was purchased, and you know all the story. And I'm 5 years. I got fired in November of 19. And November. Yeah. Because I started here March of 20. And at ValueVet, where I am now. And people coming in now 5 years later said they couldn't find me. How do you not find me? All you have to do is put in and search Jeff Werber, and I guarantee it's going to come up. So, and when they tell their friends, they said, how'd you, I just actually this week heard, so one of my old clients was talking to one of the old clients who happened to find me almost immediately as soon as I joined and moved over to ValueVet. And she was like, says, who are you going to? I just need to find a vet. I hate this vet I'm going to, et cetera, et cetera. She goes, well, I go to Jeff Werber. I go, Jeff Werber, he's still working? Yes, he's still working. He didn't went anywhere. They fired him. What idiots. So anyway, when someone says they can't find me, I'm a little bit suspect. So I'm all over the place, happily. I'm not going anywhere. So if you need me, get a hold of me. Love to help you with your pets. And if you see that post when I do this survey, I'm going to send it out to everybody. Please answer it, Dr. Actually, if you check out The Honest Vet on Instagram, that's who she is, Silva Lynn. Great, young, and knows her stuff. Her mom's a veterinarian too, so she grew up, obviously, probably wanted to be a veterinarian since she was little. So anyway, we'll see you next time, next week. I think next week. Yeah, next week. Same bat time, same bat channel, here on Instagram Live, here on Pet Life Radio. And we'll looking forward to your many, many questions. Have a great week, everybody. Bye-bye.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.